County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100-ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why this December, we're launching a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka The Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's very special episode of TCCP is none other than up-and-coming Surrey seam bowler, Gus Atkinson. So Gus, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today.
No problem.
It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, how's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, it's been all right, quite quiet, really. I mean, not really too much to do at the moment apart from chill out with family and sort of get ready to get back training, not this week, but next week. So just sort of settling down after Christmas time, really.
That's quite late to be going back to training. Is that group training, I'm guessing?
Yeah, group training. We've been lucky. We've actually had quite a lot of time off. I know a lot of boys on the circuit are back training today or tomorrow. But yeah, we've got a few extra days off. But I think I'm going in tomorrow anyway, so just get a bit of extra stuff done.
Probably for the best, isn't it? You do get a bit rusty in the off season. I mean, have you had the chance to do any winter nets, anything like that? Still keeping the body fresh?
Yeah, we've been pretty busy actually. So we got back to training early November, and we've been in 4 days a week, Monday to Thursday, netting every day, gymming, running. So it's been pretty full on leading up to Christmas. So it's nice to get a good amount of time off leading to the new year. So yeah, it's been good so far.
Yeah, it's a nice rest, isn't it, after the county grind, as we call it here in England and Wales. It does take a toll on the body, doesn't it, after a long county season. Absolutely. But just for the listeners out there, for today's podcast, I'm going to be talking to Gus about his earliest cricketing memories. Then a large chunk of today's conversation will of course centre around Surrey County Cricket Club, and then we'll wrap up today's podcast with some Twitter questions and a round of TCCP teammates. But Gus, before we get into all of that good stuff then, I want to transport you all the way back to the origins of the Gus Atkinson cricketing journey. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this wonderful game?
My first real memories is my dad played a bit of cricket when he was younger, nothing to any sort of standard, but he liked to play, you know, club and sort of village cricket stuff. So I remember going along with him to games and sort of running around, being a young kid basically, asking people to throw you balls and bowling in the nets and stuff. So I think that's where it really started. And then from there, you know, going to school, you know, asking if I could join the cricket club, and basically just went from there. Found out I was pretty good at it, so I just kept on going with it, and here we are today. So
yeah, I can't say I had the same journey, to be honest. I also love cricket. The only problem is I never found out that I was quite good at it. So yeah, that's why I'm here talking about cricket instead of playing for Warwickshire, but that's how the cookie crumbles, doesn't it?
Yeah.
In the world of sports. I mean, we're not all professional cricketers. And fortunately for Warwickshire, they don't need my services either. Otherwise, we would be in an awful lot of trouble. But Gus, in those formative years, who were your icons, your idols, your role models in the world of cricket itself? Did you have anybody who you really looked up to per se in those early days and tried to model your game off of necessarily?
I think, you know, the 2005 Ashes was a big one for me. That's, you know, the sort of generation that a lot of us are now is growing up watching that series. So I think the ones that stood out for me were Flintoff and Peterson in that series. I really sort of, I didn't come obsessed with them, but I've really looked up to them, and, you know, would ask for a woodworm bat because they had one and all this sort of stuff. So I think growing up, I looked at those two a lot. but also Dale Steyn. I think I just loved watching him bowl. So I think those are the only three that I can really sort of remember and say, yeah, those were the three.
Well, to be honest, they're not the worst choices, are they? I mean, Dale Steyn, yeah, just exactly. The 439 test wickets. Absolute.
Yeah, they're pretty good players, those three.
Yeah, quite good. Quite good. Also graced county cricket, didn't they, for a number of years with Glamorgan, Essex and my county of Warwickshire in 2007. Yeah. So, yeah, love the Stelgan here on the County Cricket Podcast. But you have brought up the 2005 Ashes, Gus, and this does come up almost every single episode. I always say for the 22 to 27 age range, that seems to be the real prime age range when it comes to talking about this particular series. I have to ask, and this might be a tough question, because it was so remarkable, so iconic, but what was your favourite moment from that incredible series between England and Australia?
There's only actually really two clear memories that I do remember. Is I remember going to school and, you know, the hype around the series at the time. I think it was the fifth test. So I didn't know what... And it was KP's knock. I remember they had it on at school. And I remember rushing home. I remember KP was 100-odd not out. And then I remember being really happy about that. And then I remember sitting there and watching when Jones took that catch off Armisen. So those two are the ones that stick out for me. Obviously, two iconic moments. But those two, yeah.
Yeah, two good moments, to be honest. Yeah. It's a tough one, though. It's always a tough one, that question, because that series was just full of iconic moments, wasn't it? I mean, even in the first test, Glenn McGrath got his 500th test wicket by getting out Marcus Trescothick. Then you had Edgbaston, Trent Bridge with Gary Pratt running out Sir Ricky Ponting and Ponting going off and giving Duncan Fletcher and the England balcony some verbals. And then Old Trafford as well. Old Trafford, absolutely remarkable, not only from that incredible reverse swing delivery, but... You know, the crowd on that day, the fact that they could not allow any more people. Old Trafford was at capacity. England and Wales properly had cricket fever. It was incredible.
I know.
Really, really incredible.
I know, yeah. Special to think that so many, like, inspired kids who are now going on in the game. You know, you might see that from what happened in the World Cup about 2 years ago, that all these kids in... I don't know, 15, 20 years might be one looking back and going, yeah, that was the moment when Jofra Archer bowled that super over that really got me into cricket. So we'll see that.
We will see, although I do think that will definitely have an impact. In fact, I was looking at the cricket participation numbers in England and Wales the other day. And in 2020, considering that we've all been suffering through a global pandemic, the numbers actually rose. So who knows the impact of that 2019 World Cup, Ben Stokes as well in the Ashes. Could be quite good for English cricket, and fingers crossed that it will be. And of course, good for county cricket. We have even more people coming and playing in the circuit.
Definitely.
But Gus, it's interesting so far, a lot of this conversation has actually centred around batting. So Kevin Peterson, I know Freddie Flintoff, also a fantastic bowler as well, but known for some excellent knocks with the bat in hand for both flanks and England as well. Why did you become a seam bowler? Out of interest, what was it about seam bowling that drew you in the first place? Why isn't Gus Atkinson a wicketkeeper, a spin bowler, an opening batsman? Why did you become a seam bowler in the first place?
I think it's not, you know, I remember when I was young, there were times where I would ask my dad to buy me some wicketkeeping gloves. So I tried that, but I don't think there is any specific reason. I just think it's something that, you know, I just was good at. But like naturally, I had a bit of pace. So I just sort of fell into it. I mean, we all try and bat when we're younger, but and I still back my batting. I think I'm a decent batter, but I think I've just always been a good seam bowler. I can't put that down to anything, to be honest. I just think falling into it.
Interesting.
That's all I can really say for that. Yeah. I'd love to have a specific reason why, but I just always seem to be good at it and had a bit of extra pace compared to some other people. So just always went with that. Yeah.
Well, no, that makes sense. I mean, in my case, yeah. I'm a spin bowler now. I used to be a seam bowler. Unfortunately, wasn't very good at it. So, yeah, became a spin bowler. Easy on the body as well, I've always thought, when it comes to spin bowling. So, yeah, it is interesting, though, how people get into it. That's why I just asked the question. But fair enough, if you're good at it, why not?
Yeah.
Why not go for it?
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. And in terms of a seam bowling, the art form, what is your favourite aspect of seam bowling as a skill? I mean, is there anything in particular, maybe swinging the ball, getting that extra bit of pace, that extra bit of bounce, sending off stumps, cartwheeling? What is your favourite aspect of seam bowling?
Yeah, I think I obviously know with spinners, they can spin the ball. They've got all sort of variations, but I just love being able to, you know, bowl the ball, have it moving. And, you know, it's a bit easier to swing the ball in and be able to swing the ball away also. Then, I mean, I think you see more people being able to do that than you've got bowlers that are able to spin the ball both ways. But I just love the ball moving in the air is something that I think all seam bowlers love, because it's just such a, you feel like you're basically well and fully in control of what you're able to do. And it's that control that sort of brings a confidence into you, a sort of attitude where you feel like you can almost do anything when you're at the end of your run up, when you've got the ball coming out of your hand the way you want it to. So I think those moments are what seam bowlers cherish, but don't always, you know, it's not every day you at the end of your run up and you're thinking in that mindset, but those days are sort of the best days, I'd say.
Oh, absolutely. And from a fan's perspective as well, don't we love it when you see the likes of a Jimmy Anderson coming in and swinging it all over the shop? And actually, Gus, this leads me nicely onto a bit of a sub question about swing bowling. What is your favourite variation of the art form itself? Is it the in-swinger, the out-swinger, some cheeky reverse swing? What is your favourite swing in delivery as a seam bowler?
For me, I love just having a stock delivery as an away swinger, but then variation of bowling a wobble seamer and it hitting the seam and coming back into the right-hander and hopefully hitting a pad or bowling them. I think that's my favourite, is a wobble seamer back into the right-hander. It's great, very satisfying to pull off.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you've got to think of the modes of dismissal as well, because you've got the clean bowls. And there's nothing more satisfying as a bowler, seamer, spinner, whatever, than seeing those bales get dislodged. It's an amazing sight, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yeah, it's a great feeling. Great feeling.
Exactly. That's why I became a bowler, because I found that more satisfying. I'm a terrible batsman as well, by the way, Gus. Absolutely terrible. Without my thick outside edges, I'd average about 3 or 4. That is my go-to shot.
Yeah.
So you won't be seeing me in county cricket anytime soon. But I've always found that feeling of just beating the batsman at the crease, oh, does not get any better.
It's great. It's great. I think all cricket fans, batsmen, bowlers, can the satisfaction of seeing someone get clean bowled, stumps everywhere or bales flying, it's just great, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's even better as a seam bowl, I suppose, if you get it cartwheeling and then it spears into the ground.
I haven't had too many of those recently, but hopefully a few next year.
Hey, fingers crossed, Gus. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly.
It is a lovely sight, though. Really is. And that's why we all love seam bowling. And actually, Gus, I want to know your opinion on this before we get into the chat about Surrey. Do you see seam bowling as the rock and roll star of cricket compared to spin bowling? Because it's almost like the romantic one. You look at the likes of a Sherb Akhtar, Sean Tate, Brett Lee. I know they're faster, but even the likes of Jimmy Anderson, Glenn McGrath, they are like real superstars. And then with spinners, they're a bit more, I don't know, I'm not going to say not as respected, but they seem to be more in the shadows, but they're more methodical. That's the way I view it personally.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think because obviously teams' bowling attacks, they're all based around seamers. That's why, you know, all the pitches you play on, I guess, might be different in the subcontinent at times, but usually you've got your 3 or 4 seamers and your one spinner, and it's sort of the seamers not putting in the hard yards, but sort of putting in the hard yards. And then you have spinners holding up an end, but then spinners, I know there's a lot of pressure on spinners because when you do get on that wicket that spins a lot, you're almost expected to go out there and take five for six for. So, you know, I obviously can't speak from a spinner's experience, but I think at times maybe they feel like they're in the back seat, especially playing in England, and they'll get their moments maybe later on in the year as the pitches get, you know, more used. So they come into their own at maybe the back end of the season and pick up match-winning performances and wickets. So, I mean, we all have our moments, I think. I wouldn't say spinners specifically are the rock stars or anything. I think spinners can, you know, win games for teams in short amounts of times and stuff. So it's a big responsibility for spinners at times as well. So.
100%. And in fact, a game, Gus, I imagine you'll know about, 2019, Surrey versus Notts at Trent Bridge. I'll never, ever forget this game. 26 wickets between Ravi Chandranashwin and Amar Verdi. Amar Verdi, bearing in mind, at this stage, I think he was 19 or 20 years of age. He took 14 wickets in a game.
I know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's ridiculous. So it's like, I think Dan Moriarty, every game he might have played for Surrey so far, he's taken five or six in the county championship. So, I mean, he's played four or so games and he's done very well for us. So, hopefully more wickets for him next year.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I mean, you do have a good spin attack down in Surrey. I must admit, Amal Verdi turns it absolute miles. Dan Moriarty can do it all as well across formats. Mm. Yeah, very, very nice. Yeah. Must admit.
Two very young spinners as well, which is good to see.
Oh yeah, 100%. Very, very bright futures. Good ceilings.
Futures looking bright, yeah.
And in fact, Gus, I think that brings me nicely onto the main chunk of today's podcast, which is the Brown Caps, Surrey County Cricket Club. One of the biggest in the country. In fact, Gus, would you say they're the biggest as a Surrey boy?
Well, I would say it, obviously. But who knows? I don't really know what we measure it on, but some pretty big clubs out there.
There most certainly are, yeah. Plenty of big ones. I know Yorkshire fans might say because of silverware.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking about, really. Yorkshire, hey, a big club.
There are a number of those big clubs, though. It'll always be a subjective debate, and we all have our own little biases as well, don't we, towards our respective clubs. But in terms of the journey with Surrey, when did the first tentative steps towards becoming a Surrey player take place in terms of age group cricket? When did you start trying to realise the dream of becoming a county cricketer?
It's a hard one to say, you know, but I started playing for Surrey at 11. So it's been a long time now. And, you know, usually you don't get that many professionals coming through in one age group. So, you know, there's some pretty good players in my age group as well. So, I mean, I always played for Surrey since I was 11, but there were times where I wouldn't say I was in the team that much. I was sort of in and out of the team. I'd sometimes, you know, turn up, not bat and bowl. But I think as soon as I hit maybe 17, I think I started just to get a bit better, put on more pace. And then I went to Australia after I left school, and then it sort of, I remember coming back and doing some pre-season stuff with Surrey, and it sort of just went from there. Signed my first pro contract, but, you know, I've always wanted to be professional cricket, but whether thinking that could actually happen, I think was actually when I would have been 17 or 18, so not actually too long before I signed my first professional contract. So it all happened a bit quickly.
Yeah, that's interesting. But then again, you've got to think the competition down in Surrey is absolutely immense, isn't it? I mean, it is one of the biggest clubs in the country playing at the Oval. It's a very, very prestigious thing to don that brown cap. And talking of donning the brown cap, granted in very, very different circumstances compared to normal debuts behind closed doors in 2020, what was that moment like after all of those years you've been playing in and around the Surrey setup since the age of 11? All of the proverbial blood, sweat, tears leading up until that point. How prestigious of a moment was that for you, Gus, to walk out onto that field as a first 11 player for Surrey County Cricket Club?
It's great memory. It's one we sort of dream of. But I thought it was a bit of a blur, really. The last 3 years I had at Surrey, well, my first 3 years were all sort of cut short through injury. So it'd been a bit of a build up for me. And I was almost thinking, oh God, is it ever going to come? Am I ever going to make my debut and stuff? And to get that opportunity was amazing. And I like to, you know, think from that moment, I sort of really felt like a Surrey cricketer in a strange sort of way. I'd been at Surrey for years and years and years, but that was the moment that, you know, I was like, I feel like a Surrey cricketer. This is what it feels like to be a Surrey cricketer. But it's a shame it was behind closed doors, because it probably would have added a bit more pressure if it wasn't. But it was kind of nice to play a first class debut and play in front of no fans, because it was a bit, I mean, I might have been a bit of extra added pressure, but it was good. It was good to finally play a game.
Yeah, I can imagine. It is lovely. It's absolutely amazing when we hear on the podcast people playing for their boyhood club. It's so, so special. Mm. It really is. When it is your local team, the team that you've been trying so many years to break into, that moment when it happens, it can't be beaten. It really is a fantastic, fantastic moment. And in terms of Surrey, and I suppose the Brown Caps as a team, Gus, what does it mean to you to play for Surrey? Because they are your local team. We keep on mentioning the size of Surrey. Mm-hmm. They are one of the biggest in the country.
Yeah.
What does Surrey County Cricket Club mean to you personally?
To me, it means everything. We had a conversation at Surrey, actually, and we all spoke about it. What playing for Surrey meant to us individually. And it means, for me personally, it's hard to explain, but it's always felt like my home. I only born and raised a few miles down the road. And I remember I'd even go to games as a fan at 17, 18 and watch Surrey play. And to be able to, look back on that now and think, wow, I'm actually walking out there with these guys that I used to watch. It's a pretty special feeling, to be honest. Especially with friends as well, who I grew up playing with at Surrey, who I've known for, over 10 years now, to walk out and play with them is pretty special.
Yeah, I can imagine it is incredibly, incredibly special. And just for the listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with Surrey, you mentioned those players mm-hmm. who have come up through the age system with you. Could you just give us some of those names? Just some examples.
Yeah, so in my year, we had Ollie Pope, Sam Curran, Ryan Patel, Amar Verdi. But then also we had, Will Jacks, who was in the year below. So he would, play with us all the time. And so with Jamie Smith. So we had a pretty strong core group of players sort of going up through the age groups. So, but to, on me, Popey, Ryan Patel, we're all pretty close mates. So, and I've probably played most of my cricket with them so far. So to be able to play with them is special, special feeling.
Absolutely. And I have to mention it because Ollie Pope was his birthday yesterday. So happy belated birthday to his holiness, Ollie Pope. Really, really hope he had a fantastic day. And he's an excellent cricketer. He really is. I know he's struggling at the moment in the Test arena, but we've seen it for years. In a Surrey shirt, I back Ollie Pope to bounce back. Yeah. I really do. I think he's an excellent, excellent cricketer. And Ryan Patel as well. I mean, he had some excellent performances, didn't he, this year in the Royal London One Day Cup. Powerful, powerful batsman.
He did. Yeah, it's always sort of difficult at times because we have such quality. So for these, especially in the One Day competition and stuff, for players who aren't consistently getting into the starting 11 to have that opportunity to go out and show what you can do in a fashion like that is pretty, pretty special as well.
100%. Yeah, and that's what the Royal London One Day Cup allowed for this year. It was to allow maybe the fringe players, the younger players, to go out there and express themselves. And I think in 2021, I think county cricket showed just the immense depth that we do have when it comes to white ball cricket. In this country. But Gus, in terms of your time at Surrey so far, okay, you've been playing as a first 11 player now for the past couple of seasons. What do you say has been your highlights out there on the pitch for the Brown Caps? Is there one particular game, one particular performance that really stands out to you above all others?
I do. I think, well, I'd say the season we just had was probably my breakthrough season, if you'd like to put it like that. And I think, you know, I only really played most of my cricket this year in the T20 team. I got fourth against Middlesex at the Oval, which was pretty cool because like that being on TV and stuff, and obviously a London derby. That was a pretty cool moment, especially to have quite a few of my friends there. So that was pretty special. But I think actually the best one was, well, we just lost to Glamorgan, I think 2 days earlier. And I think I went for 24 in my last over, which was a bit in the last over of the T20, which, and I mean, we ended up losing by one run. So, but then for the next game, I was bowling the last over and I think they needed 20 odd to win. And I went for about five or six and got three for 20 that game. So I think to come back and perform, you know, after taking a bit of a confidence blow, to come back and perform in a pressure situation was probably my best moment, I think.
I like that. I like that choice.
And yeah.
Yeah, in the T20 Blast, Gus, you did have an excellent campaign for Surrey in 2021. Yeah. 8 games, 15 wickets. Surrey's leading wicket taker in the competition. That's no mean feat, in particular, when you have got Dan Moriarty in that team, who seems to be an absolute T20 gun with his left arm off spin. So in terms of, you mentioned there about the death bowling, so from one game, 24 runs, the next one, 5 or 6, that just sums up the frenetic nature of T20 cricket, doesn't it? To say the least, and that is the life of a death bowler in the format. But what do you say, in your opinion, is the key to T20 death bowling? What do you think is the number one most important thing that a death bowler can do in over 16 to 20 in order to succeed? And, you know,
good question. I think personally, clarity is just such a big thing. You know, just taking those little moments just to have a chat to whoever's maybe at mid on or mid off and say, you know, like, you know, just a bit of reassurance, but also to actually think about it yourself and not just rely on the other people around you, and to go, you know what, I think this is my best ball that I can bowl now, to maybe get a dot or get this person off strike, bowl at the new batsman, and back that, and just back yourself to deliver that skill. As long as you bowl the ball you wanted to bowl, you execute your skill. I mean, I don't think anyone can really argue with that. So I think it's just all about backing yourself.
100%. I mean, look at Jofra. We've mentioned already about that super over, haven't we, in 2019. It's so important to back yourself, and clarity, clear communication between bowler, captain and your field as well. It's so important. And I wanted to just delve into that a little bit more in terms of the psychological aspect of death bowling, Gus, because you'll know this a lot better than I do. I don't bowl at the death, funnily enough, with my dodgy right arm off spinners. But in terms of your aim in those final overs, are you looking for wickets or are you looking for dot balls? What's your primary go-to option at the death?
Ooh, just all about not conceding runs. I mean, it's death bowling, so you will concede runs, but I think just restricting them for as little runs as possible. If you get a wicket, great, but obviously a wicket's a dot ball, it's an added bonus, but I think just runs. So it's very frustrating, you know, if someone, it's hard to say, or well, it's not hard to say, but runs is just the main currency, I think. But at times, maybe there's, you know, if you've got two wickets and two balls, there's no harm in maybe just trying to get a wicket. But I think most of the time, you're just doing it for the team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I remember, was it 2018 or 2019, Tamal Mills at the death? I think it was against Glamorgan. And he took 2 in 2 at the death, and then he got a hat-trick and won them the game. Which was fantastic. And what death bowler Tamal is. Absolutely outstanding bowler. Now gone on to come back for England as well, which is fantastic. And fingers crossed, he can also stay fit. I like that answer, though. So not conceding runs. Again, some good advice for any young death bowlers out there who want to get into the, well, the business end of T20 cricket. Yeah. It's definitely thankless, though, isn't it? Because at times, this is the problem with T20. In certain games, you'll bowl absolutely brilliantly. You'll execute your Yorkers. You'll execute your cutters, your slow deliveries. Yeah. And there might be some edges. There might be a French cut for four.
Yeah.
And then at other times, you'll bowl absolutely dreadfully. You'll walk off that field thinking, I didn't really execute here. And you've taken 2 for 20 or 2 for 21 or something like that. It's an incredibly unpredictable game, isn't it, T20 cricket?
Yeah, it is. And I think it's all about, as I said before, you know, that calmness and, you know, thinking to yourself, yeah, not getting too ahead of yourself. If you take 3 for 4 and you bowl rubbish, I mean, not going to the next game thinking I've done everything right and expect to do really well again. I think it's just all about knowing your game and how well you've done, just to be able to put your performance in the next game as well as you can for the next game, not getting too far ahead of yourself, really.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Gus, because before we go on to 2022, we go on to our Twitter questions and the teammate segment as well. I just want to delve into that slightly more, if we could, in terms of maintaining that even keel. Because let's say, for example, after the game where you took 4 for 43 on list day debut against Yorkshire up at Scarborough, how do you maintain that even keel and not get too far ahead of yourself? And at the same time, how do you not beat yourself up too much after, let's say, for example, conceding 20 to 24 runs at the death? How do you maintain that evenness, that balance, that calmness, that composure when things either go really well for you or they don't necessarily go the way you wanted them to?
I don't think it's too hard to do. I think it's just about being confident in your own game, knowing what you can and can't deliver. And I think everyone at the professional level or whatever level, I think we're all pretty good cricketers. We're all good cricketers and we all can perform and do things, you know, to a high standard. So I think I'm pretty, you know, not a very experienced cricketer, but I think for what I've learned so far is as I said before, is literally just backing yourself as much as possible, backing your skill, and I think you'll do all right if you do that. So, yeah.
Does that not get difficult at times though? Because let's say you have been absolutely pumped for, well, if we keep on bringing up the game where you conceded 24 runs, but you know, if you do get absolutely pummeled and you have executed, and let's say you have a bad run of games, how easy is it for you to maintain that level of confidence? Does it not take a hit at some point?
Morgan, I had a, you know, just had a quick chat with Carl Jameson, and we just spoke, you know, about our plans, well, the plans that I went for, and maybe what I could have done different. And I think it's about learning. You don't want to walk off that pitch or finish that game, you know, without having chatted to someone and gone to it and have clarity on maybe what you did. Because if you don't know what you did wrong, then you're never going to learn, really. So moving into that next game, just being as clear as possible on what you're going to do in the same situation again and go out and perform that skill to the best of your ability. So I think just going into that next game, putting it behind you and being clear on what you're going to do for the next game, basically, yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah, some very, very wise words there. And yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it, when you've got someone of Carl Jameson's caliber to kind of feed off of. Again, so important, that experienced player to almost bounce ideas off of when you've done well and when you haven't necessarily executed.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's also why we're so lucky at Surrey to have so many world-class players come in and out from around the world, and to learn off those guys is, you know, great, really.
100%. And you know what, Gus? You could not have set me up better for the start of our Twitter questions, because guess what one of the Twitter questions is for today? Who's the best player that you have played with? And who is the best player that you've played against? Now, this question is from 90s Cricket Lover on Twitter. Thank you very much for getting your question in. And again, just for any of the listeners out there who do want to get your questions in for upcoming podcasts, you can find us on Instagram, the Counter Cricket Podcast, or indeed on Twitter using @thecountycrick2. But Gus, who would you say is the best player you've played with and the best you've played against in county cricket so far?
I think the best I've probably played with is hard to name one, but I think Hashim Amla's got to be up there. Mm-hmm. with his records are just ridiculous. So it's hard to look past him. And then also playing against, I think it's got to be Alistair Cook. Hard to look past his records as well, really. So two pretty amazing players.
Yeah, just two of the best ever test batsmen.
yeah, so, exactly, yeah.
Incredible. And funnily enough, on your first class debut, did you not get Sir Alistair Cook out LBW?
I did. Yeah, that was a pretty cool moment, really. Pretty cool.
Is that your favourite wicket so far, or has something topped that? Because it must be special. First class debut, I know the circumstances. There were no crowd. Imagine if there was a crowd in. But that's in Alistair Cook getting LBW, but would you say that is your favourite one, or has something topped it in the game since?
I think that one was pretty special. I've got all my friends were messaging me saying it wasn't out and it pitched outside leg and was going over, but I'll take it. That was a pretty special wicket. But I also think this year it might have been a game changer, but it was my first game, well, my first T20 of the season, so I hadn't played since the first game of the year. So I was, came into the team, the T20 team. I bowled third over, and I got Banton out, after bowling a few, a good over and a half, and in front of a crowd, and to come into the team after, having the likes of Tom Curran, Sam Curran, all sort of going off for England duty, to come into the team, bowl well, and get Banton out in the power play early was a pretty good feeling in front of a decent crowd. So that was good.
Yeah, I can imagine it was. Tom Banton, yeah, yeah. An excellent cricketer, say the least. Good, very, very dangerous with the bat in hand in the limited overs for that. And talking of batting, this is a good question from Jay Shankar on Twitter. Gus, could you share your experiences of bowling to Ben Folkes, Laurie Evans, Ollie Pope and Rory Burns in the nets? Who's the toughest player to bowl to out of those players?
I'd have to say Ollie Pope out of the four. I just think he can get on top of you so easily, and he's so good. He's just very good. I remember bowling to him, it was a few years ago, and it's a moment I went, wow, like this guy can play, like almost every ball he just make it look so easy. But I don't actually get to bowl at him that much anymore because he's always away and stuff, but I think Popey, he's very, very good. Yeah,
fair enough. Yeah, nice choice. He is a lovely, lovely batsman to watch when in full flow. He really is absolutely imperious.
He is.
That's how I would describe Ollie Pope. Really, and I know this is more batting, to be honest, Gus, but who do you say is the toughest bowler that you can face in the nets?
That's a good question. I think I remember facing Stuart Meeker in the nets a few years ago, in the marquee in pre-season, and that was tough just because he was so quick. But basically, I faced some good spinners on facing Birds and Moriarty on some slightly old nets is always pretty hard, especially if you're doing white ball practice and they're spinning at miles. So, yeah, I'd say that probably.
Oh, interesting. So spinners over seamers.
Yeah, I quite like facing seamers. I don't find it easier, but I think I much prefer going in and facing seams to start than coming in against the spinners who are turning at miles and stuff. So, yeah, I'd go with that, the spinners.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah, that's completely different to me. I can't face seam bowling to save my life. In fact, this year I got out three times. Okay, I bat at number 10, fair enough. But got out three times this season, all to seam. I didn't get out to spin bowling once. Really? I love facing spin because you can move your feet, you can create the angles. Maybe that's me talking as a spin bowler. That probably does, come into play. And granted, they aren't the same standard or caliber as Amar Verdi or Dan Moriarty. But yeah, interesting. Interesting to know that then. So Amar Verdi and Dan Moriarty. Nice choices. Going on to our next one then. This is from Jacob Lunn, who is a young Somerset fan. Gus, what is your favourite ground in England and Wales apart from the Oval?
It's got to be Lords. Probably the obvious answer, but I think it's just always a pretty special place to go. Food's always amazing. You know, the hospitality that they have in the pavilion is great. But yeah, Lords is a special place. It's, you know, there's not many better days than when the sun's shining at Lords, and you know, you got a full day ahead of you. So yeah, that's easy answer, really.
I imagine it would be for quite a few cricketers, to be honest. It's absolutely gorgeous. And the thing with Lords, if you haven't been, you have to go. You have to go. I went in 2019 for England versus Ireland. It was Ollie Stone's test debut, funnily enough. And as soon as you walk through those Grace gates, you can just feel it's a special place.
Yeah.
Like the buzz, the atmosphere, the ground itself. Honestly, Lords, beautiful, beautiful locations. Go and watch, or in your case, Gus, go and play cricket. And I have to ask about the lunches at Lords. Mm-hmm. Are they the best on the county circuit?
Yeah, I'd definitely say so. There's still quite a few county grounds I haven't been to yet, but I think out of the ones I have been to, it's quite an easy yes that they are the best lunches.
Well, there we go, folks. I knew it. There's been whispers on the podcast of Middlesex and Lords having the best county lunches, and yeah, it seems as though they do. Obviously, you'll know that a lot better than I do, Gus. And in terms of our last one, this is from Foster Lawyer Fan Club, which I found out, by the way, I think he's a point guard for Michigan in American college basketball. So that was very, very niche to have a fan club for him. But Gus, will Surrey win the second 11 championship in 2022? Yes or no?
Yes. I don't know. I mean, hopefully. It'd be good for the club. So I'm going to say yes, hopefully.
Well, if you're a Surrey fan as well, fingers crossed the Division One as well, the first 11 county championship.
Yeah, that's the aim.
Most certainly is. Yeah, that's going to be an interesting division next year, isn't it? Yeah. My word. Oh, so many good players on display. And yeah, very much looking forward to that. It's, what, 4 months away now? Well, three.
Not far.
It's actually three and a bit months, isn't it? April.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Good. It's been a long wait for us as county fans.
I bet.
We've felt every single minute of it over this winter so far, especially with England, you know, not doing so well in the Ashes as well. I think that's just compounded our misery, to be honest. So, Gus, before we go on to 2022 then and wrap up today's episode, we do have our concluding segment of today's podcast, which is a favourite of mine. I am, of course, talking about TCCP teammates. So just for the new listeners out there amongst you, how this segment works is I've got an assortment of questions for Gus Atkinson to answer about the teammates that he shares a dressing room with down at the Oval. So Gus, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
I'm ready, yeah.
Fantastic. By the way, the first question pretty much sets the tone quite beautifully, I think, in my opinion. So, Gus, our first question of the day. Who is the teacher's pet down at the Oval? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Dan Moriarty. I'd say he's a bit of a new teacher's pet, but he's, I'd say Moriarty. Always sort of likes to go over and have a nice chat, you know, calls him sir. And so, yeah, but I'd say Dan Moriarty.
Fair enough. What about Ollie Pope? I would have thrown his name into the mix, but I suppose he's mostly with England, isn't he, nowadays?
Yeah, he's with England a lot, but I mean, teachers, heck, I mean, could be Pope. They do love him. They do love him. But yeah, I'd go with Moriarty. Probably.
Well, there we go then, folks. The teacher's pet down at Surrey, Mr. Dan Moriarty. It's always a good way to start that. I love it as the first question. And moving on to our second one then, Gus. Who's Mr. Hard as Nails in the Surrey dressing room? Who would you not want to mess with, per se?
I wouldn't want to mess with Jordan Clark. He's a strong man. So I wouldn't want to mess with him. I wouldn't want to mess with Rory Burns either. He's got a bit of feistiness in him where he can, but I guess he has to as a captain, doesn't he? So yeah, I'd say those two.
Yeah, to be fair, quite apt choices, I must admit. Jordan Clark, good choice. And Rory Burns as well, yeah. I think that's a good way of describing it, feistiness.
Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, right, moving on to the next question then, Gus. The first of our musically themed questions here on the podcast today. Who is the dressing room DJ at the Oval and what are their choices of tunes?
Probably actually me. I think, well, Reece is away at the moment a lot, so I've sort of been taking over the tunes in the gym. What I play a lot of Kanye West, a lot of rap mostly. It's not every favorite genre. Got a few of the older guys not enjoying it as much, but got to keep, it's hard to keep everyone happy when you're on the music. But I think after a win or after, you know, a session, we'll come back in. I think Toppers is mostly the person that gets on the music, so yeah, me or Reece.
In terms of Toppers' choices of music, is he more varied or is he a similar taste in terms of the rap music?
He's more sort of beach club music. Don't really know how to describe it, but sort of quite chilled out music, more chilled out than rap. You don't want to have to, you know, come off after a long session and have to hear a load of rap music. I think it's just a pretty mellow, chilled out tune for everyone to enjoy.
Is it like Ibiza Classics? Stuff like that?
Yeah. That sort of vibe, yeah.
Oh, fair enough. Hey, nice way to unwind vibe, those, to be fair. And to be fair, I don't mind the Kanye West either, but it depends. Is it the new Kanye or the old one?
It's a mix, but a lot of old Kanye.
I respect that. I do like some of Kanye West's music. I'm not going to, you know, start rapping along on the podcast. I don't think anyone wants to hear that. But I do respect that choice. And talking of, well, singing along or rapping along brings me nicely on to the next question, which is the karaoke king down in Surrey. Who is the best karaoke artist in the dressing room?
Hard to judge. We haven't really had, I think we had one after one game. We had a few of the youngsters actually. They came up and they sang for everyone. That was Nick Kimber, James Taylor, and Ben Geddes. So they all sung their own different songs. So out of those three, I would have said Ben Geddes was the best. And he sung "Gimme, Gimme, Gimme" by ABBA. Which is funny. It was pretty funny. So.
You know, I never would have guessed that for Ben Geddes.
Yeah, he was good. Got everyone jumping around.
You know, honestly, Gus, I would not have guessed that in a million years. You know, if you said Ben Geddes to me, a song that he would sing, I'd have thought something like Sweet Caroline. I thought he would have gone for something like that. He went for ABBA.
he went for ABBA.
How old is he? He's only about 20, isn't he?
He's 20, I think,
I'm just going to guess that. And what about Nick and James? What did they go for in terms of their tunes?
James did Angels by Robbie Williams. And Nick did Wonderwall.
Nick knew the assignment. Get everyone involved.
He did. Yeah. And Jordan Clark was on the guitar as well, so that was fun.
What, actually playing it?
He was, yeah.
Okay, that's quite cool. We'll have to get Clarkie onto the podcast. We've got Graham on. We've got his brother. We'll have to get Jordan on for a rendition.
Singing as well. Yeah.
Jordan, if you're listening, we need to make it happen. Make it happen in 2022. We'll get you on the podcast. for some karaoke. Or moving on to the next one, Gus. This is the classic one here on TCCP teammates. You are going to have to throw at least one person under the metaphorical bus. Who are the best and worst dressed down in Surrey?
Best. I can't say myself, but I'm going to go with Toppers. Toppers has some good clothes. Jade Dernback, obviously he just left, but he used to enjoy his, you know, getting ready, showing up into the changing room in all sorts of different gears. But the worst, I'll say Ollie Pope. Yeah, I'll say Ollie Pope. He won't agree with me if he hears that, but yeah, he won't be happy with that.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah. Posey.
That's harsh, Gus. You were tempted to say yourself a best dressed as well. So is there really that
big
of a gap?
I can't say that. Yeah, I can't say that. Toppers can take the crown. I'll let him have it.
To be fair, I have seen Reese's dress sense. It is quite nice. And it has variety as well. Variety is the flavour of life, as they say. To not sound too cliche, but Reese Topley. Yeah. Fair enough. So Reese Topley and Ollie Pope. Ollie Pope the day after his birthday. As well. Oh.
I know. Some new clothes for his birthday, hopefully.
We'll have to see, to be fair. Who knows, actually, Gus? Yeah. This could be the catalyst for Ollie Pope to become the best dressed. You know, take it as a positive.
Exactly. Yeah.
It might be a harsh truth for the moment, but we'll get there. We'll get there, Ollie, don't you worry.
Yeah.
I can't speak. My dress sense is absolutely non-existent, to be honest. I'm definitely the worst dressed here on the podcast. And moving on to our next one then, Gus. There might be a couple down in Surrey for this category.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the biggest cricket badger? Who really knows all the stats, the information when it comes to the game of cricket?
There is a few. I think Will Jacks is a bit of a secret badger.
There's always one. There's always one.
Yeah, he knows his stuff. I'm a bit of a badger, I'd say, probably. But I think I'm quite similar to Jaxie. I know my stuff, but I keep it secret as well, like Jaxie. Amar Verdi, he knows his stuff. He's a bit of a badger. I'd say that's it. I can't really think of too many more. Jamie Smith knows his stuff as well, actually. But he's a bit of a... We're all secret badgers, really, all of us. But... yeah, I'd say a lot of us young guys, actually. Jamie Smith, me, Verdi, Jaxie, us, I reckon.
Nothing wrong with being a badger, as a badger myself.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly. It's good.
Nothing at all.
It's good for the game, and also it's good that, you know, it's all the youngsters as well. Shows there is an appetite for the game of cricket, Gus.
Exactly.
I'm going to test that badger knowledge with a random question.
Oh, no.
Hey, it's podcast lore. Okay, if someone says themselves for a topic when it comes to Cricket Badger, they have to get the question. So the question for you, Gus, is which county won the first ever county championship in 1890? Listeners, you can play along at home.
I don't know, but I'm just going to take a wild guess and say Kent.
Final answer?
Final answer, yeah.
It wasn't Kent, Gus. Do you know who it was? You may or may not play for this team.
I was going to say Surrey, but I didn't know if you were going to be joking or not. But yeah, that would have been my second answer.
No, it was. It was Surrey. Surrey won the first ever county championship. Just a nice bit of trivia for the podcast. Hey, something for us. All to learn, and for the listeners as well.
Should have known that, probably.
Yeah, but it's a tough one, to be fair. That is a tough question. And to be honest, I think it was like mid-2020, I didn't know that. I'm going to be honest, I had to do my own research behind that. But yeah, 1890, there we go. We know for the future. Surrey won the first ever county championship. Nice bit of trivia. Moving on to our next one then, Gus. Dressing room joker. Who is the funny man in the Oval dressing room? Who's always pulling some pranks and, you know, being a bit of a menace?
I actually think There's a few. I think me, Jordan Clark, and Reece Tuckley, we like to play a few jokes. I feel like I'm always saying the same people here, but I think we like to keep it, you know, fun at times. So I tell you, who's Gareth Batty? He's a bit of a joker. So obviously, he's just retired, but he's still in with the kind of coaching staff now. He's a bit of a joker, so he keeps it fun. But yeah, I'd say myself, Reece Topley, and Jordan Clark. Problem is, we've got so many guys to away the whole time, so it's hard to have a consistent sort of joke. I'd go with us three.
Right, I have to follow that up before we go on to our final teammates question. What is the best prank that you guys have pulled in that dressing room?
I'm trying to think of something, but I can't. It's going to sound like they're not very funny at all. But I wish I had a really good prank to tell, but I can't think of one. I don't think we haven't done anything too pranky, but we just mostly just like to keep the sort of atmosphere in the changing room good and just tell a few jokes and stuff. I'll have to start thinking of pranks to do for the new season. Start pranking people.
Hey, fair enough. In terms of one of the funniest ones that I've heard here on the podcast, I'm not going to reveal who it was. You'd have to listen to the Scott Steele podcast, but really, really random. A certain someone in Durham dressing room went round signing everyone's kit, literally like pads, helmet, gloves, just randomly signing it before they'd go out to bat. I was like, how did you get that idea in the first place? And it must be really, really weird if you're going out to bat and you've just got some random signature on your gear.
That is good. That's funny.
It's a creative one, but where does the idea in the first place come from? Like, you think of a prank, you think of something completely different. Don't just think, get the signing pen out. It's like...
Yeah, that's rogue, that. No, we haven't had anything quite like that in the Surrey changing room, but...
Hey, Gus, 2022. You could do that to Will Jacks, just Gus Atkinson.
Fine.
On his pads.
Might have to, yeah. I think he'd be very happy with that.
Who knows? You never know until you do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right then, Gus. Moving on to our final teammates question for today, and this is one of my absolute favourites. It used to be I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, but it's no longer the time of year, is it? Basically, it's just come to an end. So we're in 2022, and as people here in the UK know, there is a certain show that comes on every summer. I'm not a massive fan of it personally, but I know a lot of people are, and the show that I'm talking about is, of course, Love Island. So our final question for today's teammate segment is, who in the Surrey dressing room would be the most likely to appear on Love Island?
There's three that come to mind straight away, and I think it would be Laurie Evans, Tom Curran, or Reece Topley. Just because, you know, TC and Laurie are in pretty good shape. Could see them on it. Laurie's married, so I don't think it would ever happen. But I think a lot of people would say Toppers. He's got that whole sort of look, tall tattoos. So yeah, I have to go with him.
Do you know who I would have gone? As soon as I saw that question, I would have gone Tom Curran. I just think at some point, wouldn't he be absolutely perfect to go on Love Island? Yeah. Maybe get a different haircut as well. Do you remember his 2015? It was like the Viking top knot.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just saying, I could see him on Love Island.
For it, yeah. Yeah, I could see that as well. I could, yeah.
What about yourself, Gus? Let's say, I don't know, ITV, you got an email in the inbox and they said, come on to Love Island. Fair enough, it is during the cricket season though. So you would have to bear that in mind. Would you go on, or is it not your kind of thing?
not a chance I'd go on. Not a chance. There's no way I'd... You know, I wouldn't want. I just would find it difficult just knowing there's cameras on you 24/7 and recording everything you say and do. So that in itself is quite a big reason not to go on it. I definitely wouldn't go on it.
Not that I would ever have the choice. Fortunately for the listeners, you only get the audio version of the podcast, not the visuals. Gus is the one currently struggling at the moment with my less than picturesque face. But in terms of Love Island, I don't think I'd want that either. Just the constant camera tension. And not only that, you know, when you come out of the villa, when you come out of the villa, just all the brands, the ads, the deals, you know, you'd get no privacy, would you, if you went on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not for me, but I can see why it's quite appealing to a lot of people. But
it's the fame, isn't it, I suppose?
Yeah,
not my kind of thing at all. I think I'll stick to county cricket for the time being. And talking of county cricket then, Gus, before we say our goodbyes and wrap up today's podcast, what are your aspirations from a personal and a club level heading into 2022? What do you want to achieve heading into this year's county cricket season?
For me personally, I just, you know, want to try and contribute to as many wins as possible. You know, obviously I want the club to win trophies, and I want to, you know, be in that first team week in, week out, winning games for Surrey. I think that'd be my main thing, trying to establish myself a bit more in the Red Bull stuff. And just, you know, I just don't want to put any specific targets or goals, but just, you know, I'd love it if Surrey could win a trophy this year. And to be able to contribute to that would be amazing. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Gus, I think it goes without saying, but myself, Joe and Lucy here at the County Cricket Podcast, wishing both yourself and Surrey all the best of luck heading into this season. It's not that far now, is it?
Thank you very much.
No, it's not. I mean, 3 and a bit months. Honestly, I'm absolutely elated. We just need the fixtures to come out now. And
we'll be out training in the marquee outdoors on grass in probably 5 weeks.
It comes by quickly, doesn't it? When you think about it, it feels like, you know, in the blink of an eye, it's gone from the Bobolish Trophy final. We've had Christmas.
I know.
And now it's restarting. It's a bit manic and hectic at times, isn't it, county cricket? But hey, in my opinion, best domestic circuit on the planet. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I can't wait. This is like my Christmas, you know, when the schedule comes out. So eagerly awaiting that. I can't wait to see who we've got first game of the season. But Gus, I think that's a nice way to wrap up what's been a very, very enjoyable podcast. I must admit, I've thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it, Percy speaking. So before we wrap up and say our final goodbyes, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, not really. Not too much into self-promotion and that sort of stuff. But if anyone who's hasn't got a county team to support, supports Surrey. So I'm sure everyone does do this thing. But if not, then there you go.
Well, if you are not a county fan at the moment and you don't want to support Surrey, I'll just throw Warwickshire's hat into the ring as well. You know, current county champions as well. Just get that in there at the end of the podcast. A final bit of Warwickshire bias, as our faithful listeners know. But Gus, thank you very much for today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Wishing you
all the best of luck for the 2022 season. And of course, to all of our wonderful listeners, thank you for all of the support in 2021. It's been an absolute pleasure. We are now heading into 2022. We've got plenty more content planned for you heading in to not only the county season, but of course, the year beyond with a load of interviews as well. But thank you very much for tuning in. As always, guys, and as always, we'll see you on the next one.